Hi, this is Doug Henwood. My Behind the News show for October 13, 2005 was a special fundraising edition. It ran for 3 hours, but about half of that was taken up with fundraising appeals. I figured the web audience would not want to listen to that, so I'm just presenting the individual interviews themselves that constituted the bulk of the substance of the show. The three guests were Robert Greenstein of the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, based in Washington, D.C., Beverly Wright, the director of the Deep South Institute for Environmental Justice in Louisiana, and George Galloway, the British Member of Parliament who recently debated Christopher Hitchens in New York, who in May confronted Norm Coleman and his colleagues in the U.S. Senate, giving them a very hard time about the war in Iraq, and is also the author of the book Mr. Galloway Goes to Washington, which recently came out from the New Press. So here is the interview with Robert Greenstein.
For a little while after Hurricane Katrina hit, it looked like issues of race and poverty were breaking into our national discourse. They seem to be receding again. Is that your impression?
Unfortunately, it is. We had that speech the president gave from in front of the St. Louis Cathedral in New Orleans, where he spoke about race and poverty and said we needed to take bold action to confront it. But we've had a real pendulum swing, and it now looks like the only bold action on the horizon is actually to cut programs for the poor, including some of the most successful and effective programs for the poor, more deeply than Congress was planning to cut them before the hurricane, in order to offset some of the costs of hurricane relief in that manner. We're really back to business as usual here in Washington. Tax cuts for people at the very top of the income scale, which are now averaging over $100,000 a year for people that make over $1 million a year, continue to be off the table. We're not allowed to talk about them, or at least policymakers on the Hill are not talking about them as a way to offset some of the hurricane-related costs. They're just talking about cutting domestic programs instead, and are looking in particular at some of the major programs for low-income families.
Well, what happened, do you think?
It's hard to know to what degree this discussion of looking more seriously at poverty was real to begin with, or a response to a number of days of really bad publicity. But fundamentally, I think what's happened is the following. Following the president's speech from New Orleans on September 15th, where he essentially said, you know, we're going to provide relief and we're going to rebuild and we're going to spend what it takes to do it, there was really an explosion of anger from, I guess the best term, actually, I guess, the right wing, the most conservative wing of the Republican Party, essentially the president's conservative base, really got extremely agitated about this and started demanding large cuts in domestic programs to pay for, to offset the hurricane-related costs. That was then followed by the president's nomination of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court, which drove the conservative base even deeper into anger. And what appears to be happening is the president is not going to withdraw Harriet Myers, but Republican congressional leaders in the House and the Senate, and to some degree in the White House, are now trying to allay the anger from their base by agreeing to cut more deeply into domestic programs to offset part of the cost of the hurricane. By the way, on a substantive grounds, for people such as myself who are deeply concerned about the long-term deficits, budget deficits the nation faces, this action actually has little substantive merit. The problem in terms of deficits is the problem of running long-term deficits year after year that gradually have a corrosive effect, kind of like termites eating at the foundation of a house. There is not a problem with running temporary deficits, and this is why the rules that were followed in the 1990s, the decade when we went from deficits to surpluses, were that ongoing tax cuts and entitlement program increases needed to be paid for, but the temporary one-time expenses and responses to disaster and emergencies did not need to be paid for because they were temporary costs that would not increase long-term deficits. Where we're headed today here in Washington is to try to offset some of the costs of the temporary expenses from responding to the hurricane, and to do that in significant part by cutting programs for low-income and vulnerable families, while proceeding with ongoing long-term tax cuts, primarily for high-income people, that will not be paid for. So it really makes little sense as economic or fiscal policy, and from the standpoint of equity, it's taking the very kinds of people we saw to be in desperate straits in New Orleans and putting the load more heavily on them than on anyone else to pay for the costs of the aftermath of the hurricanes.
It may surprise some of the listeners to hear you say that long-term deficits are undesirable, since people on your end of the political spectrum are usually thought to be somewhat sanguine in the face of red ink. You see Jamie Galbraith writing memos saying that we really shouldn't worry, that the deficit hawks are you know, just dealing with an out-of-date ideology. Why do deficits matter, long-term structural deficits matter to you?
If we knew that we could keep deficits as far as the eye can see at a level that the total national debt, which is the accumulation of all the deficits we've ever run, that the total national debt would not increase as a percentage of the economy, then we could really absorb modest deficits, I think, as far as the eye can see. The problem is that the long-term forecast is for deficits that are much larger than that. And if you have deficits that are much larger than that year after year, you can have two or three problematic effects. Number one, you're soaking up too much money to cover deficits that otherwise might be invested in making the economy more productive, and I think that can have adverse effects on economic growth and job creation. Secondly, whether you think my first point is right or not, the financial markets believe that, and it's likely to exert upward pressure on interest rates over time, which clearly would depress investment. And finally, from people that don't buy either of those first two points, consider the third, and that is the larger the debt becomes as a share of the economy, the larger the share of the federal budget that has to be used to pay interest payments on the debt. We're now on course that 10 years from now we'll be spending about $500 billion a year on interest payments on the debt. You don't get a school for that, you don't feed a child for that, you don't give anybody health insurance for that. And what I am particularly afraid of is 10 or 20 years from now, seeing some of the programs that I care most about, programs that help reduce poverty or help people in tough straits or clean up the environment, being squeezed out by the ever-rising costs of simply paying interest payments on the debt. That's something I would like to avoid.
You sometimes hear it said, particularly on the political right, that President Bush is like the last of the big-time spenders, and that domestic discretionary spending in particular has gone up wildly under his administration. What do you say to that?
Well, it's actually not true. There have been big increases, obviously, in spending over in Iraq. But interestingly enough, even with the spending in Iraq, if you look at total federal spending, domestic defense combined, total federal spending as a share of the U.S. economy, which is the best way to compare it over time, is actually lower now than its 30-year average level from 1975 through 2005. The claim that domestic spending has exploded is simply factually incorrect. It is true that domestic spending a couple of decades from now is on track to reach very high levels when the baby boomers retire in large numbers, and in particular, as healthcare costs continue to rise. If you have higher healthcare costs and more old people, and healthcare costs more for older people than younger people, you can get a big increase in spending. But as of today, the deficits that we have right now are not because domestic spending is unusually high. They basically stem from the fact that tax revenues are unusually low. We're significantly below the average level of tax collection as a share of the economy in the United States over the last several decades, and spending is not above its historic level. I mean, in fact, last year, 2004, tax revenues fell to their lowest level as a share of the economy since 1959. You know, in 1959, we didn't have much federal environmental expenditure. We didn't do much federal aid to education. Medicare and Medicaid didn't even exist. Programs like food stamps and Head Start didn't exist. You can't run today's level of government on the levels of revenue we brought in several decades ago. That's, in many ways, the core of the current problem, not that there's some unusually, atypically high level of federal spending.
It does look like a lot of people, the Republicans and the right more broadly, would like to use New Orleans and its surrounding area as kind of an experiment for a lot of right-wing social policy experiments, vouchers, and housing and education vouchers and such. What do you think, what have they got up their sleeves exactly?
Well, I think that some conservatives, certainly looking at the big potential expenditures in rebuilding New Orleans, want to try to follow a series of long-sought conservative prescriptions. You know, you have Jack Kemp saying that we should eliminate estate taxes altogether on the tiny fraction, probably less than 1%, of extremely wealthy people in the area who otherwise would owe estate taxes. It's kind of a ludicrous suggestion. It'll do virtually nothing to spur investment and bring jobs back there. But it's sort of using this to advance long-held ideological views. And you see this in, for example, the actions the administration has taken to allow lower wages to be paid to people involved in Reconstruction, to ease affirmative action guidelines, to call for private school vouchers, and the like. But I think that there are a larger group of conservatives who are less focused on those kinds of policies than on utilizing the specter of increased government expenditure in the Gulf Coast to fight for substantially larger cuts in federal domestic programs of all sorts than they otherwise would be able to get. They're sort of reacting by saying, if we don't do these cuts, we'll be moving too much toward big government, which I think isn't really correct, since the expenditures in New Orleans would be temporary and after a few years would not be an ongoing part of the budget. But they would like to use this as a justification to make permanent changes in a variety of areas, from energy conservation to health insurance coverage for the poor, in order to shrink the role of the federal government. Now, there's one example that you used where I actually think that progressives and conservatives have a similar view, and it is a view I share, and that is that in the housing area, actually housing vouchers are the best prescription for people who were displaced from the hurricane. Dumping them into trailer cities built in the middle of nowhere where there are no jobs is not the best way to go. In areas where there is adequate rental housing available, and that isn't true of every place where there are evacuees, but some places, giving people who have been displaced the purchasing power to go rent a decent private apartment is the best way to go, and housing vouchers do that. Housing vouchers actually are something that may have started 30 years ago as a recommendation of the Nixon administration, but are now widely regarded, I think, by progressives as much of it as really being an enlightened policy.
Give us some detail on what exactly the fiscal hawks in Congress would like to cut, some programs, and how deeply they want to cut them.
There's this question, actually, of what makes one a fiscal hawk. I have trouble considering as being fiscally responsible a member of Congress who wants to do $200 billion in cuts in domestic programs and then turn around and do $500 billion in tax cuts. But be that as it may, there is the most conservative group of members of the House of Representatives are a group that call themselves the Republican Study Committee. And this group of members issued a document about 2 weeks ago calling for about $900 billion over 10 years in cuts in response to the hurricane. Of course, they would cut far more than the hurricane cost if they did that. And in their package, they about 40% of their package included cuts in programs for low-income families. They would cut the Medicaid program, the health insurance program for poor children, parents, elderly people, and people with disabilities by about $250 billion over 10 years. They would cut the earned income tax credit, which reduces the taxes and supplements the wages of working poor families with children, by $85 billion over 10 years. They had big cuts in everything from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which helps protect the nation against infectious diseases, to energy conservation and various environmental programs. They also included a series of proposals that would substantially increase premiums and co-payments that modest and middle-income elderly people would have to pay under Medicare, and their proposals would actually raise out-of-pocket Medicare costs for most modest-income elderly beneficiaries of Medicare by nearly $2,000 a year. Now, they also would delay the Medicare prescription drug benefit a year. Now, proposals like those that would make middle-income people pay more for Medicare are not going anywhere. The congressional Republican leadership knows those would be political suicide. So those have already been jettisoned. And what that means is that the areas where there may well be the greatest pressure because they're politically weaker are programs for lower income and more vulnerable families, rather than something like Medicare premiums for the entire